Hurricane Fly, half a length, Petlow's Cross. Hurricane Fly wins the Champion Hurdle. And Sizing Europe driven out, winner of the Arkell, now as the Queen Mother Champion chase to his illustrious Roll of Honour. He knows where the finishing post is, and he's going to see him off. And Big Box makes history and wins his third World Hurdle. Brilliant. A new name on the Gold Cup Roll of Honour, and Long Run has won a memorable Gold Cup made so by Denman and Quarto Star.
You're listening to the Guardian Racing Cheltenham Festival podcast in association with Timeform. Joining me, Alex Steedman, to look at the 4 days at Cheltenham in March are Chris Cook, Deputy Racing Editor, Greg Wood, Racing Correspondent, and Will Haler, Chief Tipster. And we'll be joined by our betting expert, Tony Calvin from Betfair, as well. Gentlemen near the top of their profession, very much on their A game in the build up to this. Let's welcome Chris Cook first of all. Chris, what does Cheltenham mean to you?
Cheltenham is like Christmas for adults for me. It's the high point of your year, and the only thing that makes me sad about it is the sort of deflated feeling you get at the end of it all, particularly if all your bets are losing ones, which can happen.
But not this year.
Not this year, obviously.
Greg, how about you?
For me, it's just the 4 days when you can just dive straight in and forget about everything else. And it's just from the moment you wake up and the moment you go to bed, whatever time that might be, it's just all about Cheltenham. There's nothing quite like it. There's no meeting that has the build up to it either. You wouldn't miss it for anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Our man up in the north, Will Haler, often pulls cold water on this ebullient enthusiasm. But Will, do you even get caught up in it? Are you like a kid in a candy store?
Well, you're right, Steedo. I am a bit of a misery guts from time to time. But it's my favourite week of the year. And the way I always explain it to people is that it's the only week of the year where I don't mind being at the race course at 8:30 in the morning. You know, any other day you'd be completely nuts to be there 6 hours before the first race. But at Cheltenham, you just can't be there early enough. You just want it. You want it to happen, don't you? You want the gates to open. You want to surge inside, and you just want all your questions to be answered. And that's what I'm really looking forward to next week.
Are there golden rules, gents? Let me ask you this first of all. For people who are going to go, are there key things to do and not to do, and we'll come to the punting question perhaps afterwards?
Well, I mean, it's a whole experience. You have to start off, it starts the moment you wake up, wherever you happen to wake up. I mean, getting there can be an experience in itself. But once you're at the track, you've got to be prepared for huge crowds. It can take a while to get around. One good tip, I think, is often to go and have a look at the horses in the pre-parade ring rather than the paddock. You can still get there, you can still see them before the race, and then you won't have to then fight your way around the paddock, and you'll have time to get into the betting ring, perhaps have a bet, and get yourself sorted for the race. That the betting ring itself can be extraordinary. I long ago gave up trying to have a bet in the betting ring at Cheltenham, because you just can't physically move. There are people who just take up residence in the ring, don't move. They are in front of a bookmaker all afternoon, and the bookmakers will say to you the only limit on the amount of money they can take is just how quickly they can put it in the bags.
Yeah. Chris, I always think that everyone's got their own way of doing it at the festival, but if you're only going to go for one day, I'd always say try and do one of the things that you want to do per race. So if it's go and look at the runners in the paddock, get a bet on, get a place in the stands, maybe get yourself a Guinness or some other lovely drink. You can't do them all at once. Each individual race, you've got to space it out through the day.
To be honest, I think that's good advice for almost any race meeting at Cheltenham these days. I mean, so many of them are really busy. And it's sort of spread over such an enormous amount of ground at Cheltenham, much more than at most other race courses. I would say, in addition to what Greg's saying, and endorse all of that, make sure you're extremely well fed before you turn up at the race course, because you don't want to be there hungry and sort of queuing for half an hour while the supreme novices are going down to the start. You know?
Will Haler, you're never hungry, just hungry for winners, I guess. But what would be your sort of golden rule in terms of if you're attending?
The three things I always think are most important are get there early, get there earlier than early, you know, get there as early as you can do, because you can't be there early enough. You'll see so much and take so much in that you'll never regret turning up there an hour earlier than you were going to. Secondly, if you're having a bet, don't bank on being able to manage your positions effectively when you're there, because the 3G and the mobile phone reception can be a nightmare. If you've got an electronic device, or no matter how posh it is, whether it's an iPhone or a B phone or whatever it is, you know, you're going to struggle to get a signal. So don't go thinking, oh, I'll sort that out at the time. It's best to have a clear idea what you're doing with your betting. Sort your positions out nice and early. And the third thing is, just my personal opinion, which is, you know, try and keep a clear head. Try and stay away from the sort of liveliest places. Get a decent spot next to the winner's enclosure, next to the parade ring. Try and see as much as possible that happens in that fantastic winner's enclosure, that brilliant amphitheatre that Cheltenham has got. Get there and be part of it and watch it all unfold.
And if you're lucky enough to back a win, and hopefully on the back of this podcast you're going to do more than just that, but if you are, getting back to that winner's enclosure to see your horse come back in and enjoy the thrill of several other pilgrims who've done the same thing, to get that sort of moment. And it is a moment in time, Greg, isn't it? It's something quite special.
It is. You've got to be aware that the moment the first race goes off to the end of the last race, it just passes in a flash. Once it all starts, it's just a complete roller coaster, regardless of whether you're working or anything else.
It's probably worth reminding even hardened seasoned punters as well, one or two rules. Do you have hard and fast rules that you try and stick by? Because suddenly when the blood's pumping and the atmosphere's up and the 15th race is already underway, it's very easy to get carried away.
I think hard and fast rules are probably the enemy of successful punting. The only one I'd have is to make sure that you've made up your mind before you go, because if you're sort of changing your mind at the last minute, that's when things can go badly wrong for me.
Don't get downhearted either. It's really difficult to find winners at Cheltenham. It may well be you don't find one until the last day or even the last race. But there's always the potential for that horse to come and put you back ahead on the week. Yeah. And if you've reduced your stake down to 10% what it was at the beginning, because you're losing heart, because you're losing faith, then you're going to be just simply gutted when the horse or something comes up at 16-1 in the Grand Annual, and you've only had a fiver on it.
I think Greg's remembering my spread bet from 5 years ago when I bought the number of total photo finishes, and there wasn't a single one for the first three days of the meeting. It was only on the last day that I think three of the first four races were photo finishes. Wow. So, you know, you're never dead and buried.
So keep the faith, I think, is the slogan ahead of this year's festival. Let's talk about the Gold Cup then, gents, and let's get the lowdown, first of all, on the markets and the stories for the Blue Riband over the last week or so in the company of Tony Calvin. Tony, extraordinary goings-on in the Gold Cup market over the last week or so. What's the latest, first of all, on Cotto Star?
As of Monday morning, still 50-50. There's more positive bulletins there, but there was an intended gallop there with Big Bucks. So that's due for Saturday, but then I think they've got to school it again after that, haven't they? They've, you know, I think to my mind, I think when they school it again, I think it's going to be more of a test of its, you know, aches and strains than just a full out, you know, five furlong gallop with Big Bucks. So I don't think the gallop will be the be all and end all, but I think it will be a big deciding point.
I spoke to Ruby Walsh on Monday. He said that horse will not go for the Gold Cup unless he's 100%, which means that punters can have a complete faith in punting Cotto Star should he turn up on the day.
I think you can be absolutely sure of that, which leads me to believe it might be more likely not to run than to run, because they have to be 100% sure and they don't want to go down the Istrabat route in 2002?
Yeah, jump a few hurdles to lap of honour.
Yeah, they can't go down that route, but like I said, it's still all to play for. No, the horse is a lot better. Clifford's happier with it, but like I said, they haven't really tested it out yet.
Well, gents, an eventful week indeed in the life of Paul Nicholls and Cotto Star. Greg, as a newsman, first of all, have you seen anything like that in recent times?
Obviously, because it's a huge amount of interest. It's the most famous steeplechaser in the world, and he's been the story of the season. His return to his very best form. I, like a lot of people, thought after last year's Gold Cup that might be the last Gold Cup he'd contest. And he didn't look like a horse who was going to win another one. But in two races this year, he's looked like he really is back to something close to his best. And he has to have a very decent chance of getting his third win. And there's no getting away from it. If he doesn't line up, it will take some of the gloss off the festival. Cheltenham will survive, but it won't be the same.
No, it won't. Chris, you were there last season the race of a lifetime for many of us. I think you sort of tweeted that at the time post-race, easy to get caught up in that moment. But for those that were at Haydock and then at Kempton this season, to see that the renaissance in Côte d'Or has been, oh, it's been breathtaking.
Haydock was especially fun because the warmth of the crowd for this horse, I mean, it wasn't really, you know, expected. I think he was, what, 13 to 2 that day. And, you know, he went out in front and just kept going, and then long run started making mistakes behind him. The sort of building noise from the crowd. Mm. I don't think of sort of Haydock as being the sort of place where you get that kind of crowd noise during a race. But they really got caught up in that race, and the atmosphere around the winner's enclosure afterwards was sensational. It would be different again, you know, next week if Cato does turn up and then somehow manages to win. I said in the paper, I think we're all in danger of forgetting the age factor. He's 2 years older than any Gold Cup winner since 1969, and I know trends nuts get a bad name with other people, but I mean, you know, that is a serious thing to bear in mind. It's not just a case of him overcoming this setback that he's had. He has to overcome this thing that, you know, horses of his age have not been able to do in the modern era.
That's true, Will Haler, but then I think he was described as the extraterrestrial once upon a time, wasn't he? And there is something otherworldly about Côte d'Or. Is he just a horse that defies logic anyway, never mind the history books?
Yeah, I mean, I put my money where my mouth is with him twice this season, Steedo, and I've been, you know, had my pants pulled down twice because, I couldn't have been more wrong. I thought he was vulnerable at Haydock, I thought he was vulnerable at Kempton, and he's proved me wrong twice. So, it's hard, you know, when you've had a clobbering twice like that, it's hard to go back into the ring and say, come on, do it again. I don't think he'll win the Gold Cup. Whether I want to take a financial position against him, as I have done, particularly at Kempton, whether I really want to do that again, I don't know. Because for racing, I can see only an upside to him winning the Gold Cup. So I may be inclined just to sit back and watch the race and see how it unfolds. But it's going to be a brutal Gold Cup. I know we often say that, don't we, when there's a lot of pace in the race. But long run's best chance of winning this Gold Cup is to at least help Midnight Chase ensure that they go a real good gallop. Stamina is long run strong suit, and I think they're going to try and stretch Côte d'Or as much as they possibly can.
It's 12 months on, it's a complete reversal of fortunes, isn't it? Long run's not done anything wrong by any stretch, but he's been beaten a couple of times by a rejuvenated Côte d'Or. In all of the sort of Côte d'Or story, we've slightly forgotten maybe to question where Long Run's at in his sort of preparation for returning to Cheltenham. Greg, what's your take on where he is at?
To me, he just hasn't looked like quite the same horse this season, whether that's because Côte d'Or is a much better horse this year. Long Run hasn't looked like the horse he was last year, I don't think. I think he had a much harder race, perhaps, than it appeared at Haydock. I think given where he was for large parts of the race and some of the mistakes he made, I think he must have had a pretty hard race to get as close as he did to Côte d'Or. So, again, he's not a horse I've certainly been backing at the current price. His current price reflects the doubts over whether Côte d'Or will be running. But he doesn't convince me as an even money chance or anything close to it. I will still be looking for something else each way. Even if they both turn up, I'll be looking to back something each way because I don't think they're both going to run to form.
I think the market's been pretty shrewd. He's been favourite all the way through, hasn't he? Even after Cato won those two races. So there's probably no twang in his price. But can I suggest an interesting each way possible in Metamee? Obviously, he hasn't been confirmed for the race yet. I believe the trainer and the owners are humming and hawing amongst themselves as to what they're going to do. Mm. And they both wish that the other one would make the decision. But allow me to make the decision for them because I think he's, the more I look at him, where I think he might have the right sort of profile for this race. He went close in the Supreme, got beaten a bit further in the Arcole. You know, the kind of profile that War of Attrition had before he won the Gold Cup. He was a close second in the handicap over about 2.5 miles at Cheltenham in December off a mark of 1.57. Long Run was third in the November race off 1.58. So again, there's a similarity there. Obviously, Long Run, War of Attrition, we're always going to improve for the 3 miles, and you don't know that's true with Metamee. But if he has, in fact, always been a kind of a slow horse in disguise and is actually going to improve for the extra test of stamina, he's right in this. And you can get, I think, 50s or maybe even 60s on Betfair just now. I should say, I have to take an interest. I know a friend who knows the owners, and I've been trying to persuade her by text to tell him to run him in the Gold Cup. But I don't know if I'll get very far with that. She hasn't replied to me yet.
Watch this space. Timeform have long run £1 clear of Cortostar, and then they're £10 clear of everything else. That underlines that the supporting cast, Greg, has to step forward. And Will Hader, if you were, we've had a few sort of outside pokes at bigger prices. If you were look sort of deeper into that supporting cast, likes of Burton Port, who chased home long run in the Denman chase at Newbury. Weird Al's been talked off by a few people. The news on him with Donald McCain coming up shortly. And Synchronised, potentially, might not have to improve too far. Who's your sort of left field dart for a place, perhaps?
Well, given that Weird Al has shown all of his best form on the back of the break, you know, you'd have to be pretty impressed with what he achieved behind Cortostar and long run at Haydock, given that he'd run only, you know, fairly recently before, you know, at Wetherby before that. So I think with a break since in his favour, Weird Al is a perfectly legitimate outsider. And he does have the potential to improve on everything he's done so far. I think he's a very interesting, appealing kind of bet.
Cheltenham Bankers, two words that are muttered in the build-up to the festival, in pubs across the land. There are several horses, several shorties. There's five or six of them, in fact, that will definitely sink or swim for many people's punting weeks. Let's talk about those and the big three, Big Bucks, Hurricane Fly, and Sizing Europe. Let's get the latest on the markets now with Tony Calvin. Let's talk about the big three. Big Bucks, Hurricane Fly, Sizing Europe. Will they all wing? They've been described as banker material. What's the betting been like regarding that trio?
Well, Big Bucks is the shortest price of the festival. It's quite surprisingly 1.65. Cravega's the next shortest price at 1.72. Then you've got the Hurricane Fly trading around the even money mark. You've got Sizing Europe around 11 to 10 chance. You've got Sprinter Sacra around about 11 to 10 chance as well. So there's about five horses in there will make or break, you know, many backers and lads festival. So it's interesting. I'm reasonably surprised that Big Bucks is the shortest price of that quintet, to be honest with you, bearing in mind it probably has got its hardest test in Oscar Whiskey. And looking at what Cravega's got to beat, Cravega's a bigger price than Big Bucks, and Cravega's got nothing of note to beat. But it's certainly a Betfair-type festival when you've got five real shorties there.
The Cheltenham Festival issue of the Timeform Black Book is your earliest opportunity to get Timeform ratings for all 27 races, plus every jump source profiled in the A to Z of racing and ratings for action over Imperial Cup weekend. It's everything you need in one book. Order yours from March the 7th for just £30 at www.timeform.com/shop.
So Big Bucks, Hurricane Fly, Sizing Europe, gents. If you had one of those horses to run for your life, Chris Cook, which would it be?
Up to now, I think that would definitely have been Big Bucks. And I'm not a big backer of odds on horses, but I have sometimes backed him during the sort of run 15. Not all of them, unfortunately. But he's been so solid, hasn't he? And oddly, of the three, I'm sort of thinking that he might be the one I would take on this time. Not because there's anything vulnerable about him in particular, just because he's up against a really interesting contender in Oscar Whiskey, and you could just about imagine him beating him. Whereas with Hurricane Fly, Sizing Europe, I'm not sure the opposition is there to actually beat them, as well as the fact that they are both so very solid.
Different kind of brilliance to Hurricane Fly, Greg. Yeah. A different way of getting the job done.
Well, but he gets it done. And that, I mean, if it was for a horse to run for my life, which is the ultimate even money bet, if you like, then it would have to be Big Bucks. Because the price he is at the minute represents his chance. These are all mature markets. People have been betting into most of them for the last year. Mm. He's 4-7. That suggests he's got about somewhere between a 60 and 65% chance of winning. That's the one. If you had to go for one of them, that's the one you'd have to say. You're not going to get a huge amount back, but that's where I would go if I was forced to. I don't really hold with the concept of bankers as such. To me, they are just horses with prices and chances, and you are just trying to find the horse with a slightly better chance than its price implies. It's always going to be difficult at this stage, simply because these markets are so mature. Betfair now makes it even more so, especially on the day of the race. Horses do tend to start at the right price.
We could pop in a and in brackets after the Cheltenham Bankers storyline, then we could say most likely winner. And at the prices, the right one. I think Hurricane Fly only has to do what he did 12 months ago. And arguably, well, not arguably, he's got a weaker field to do it again. So I think at the prices, he's the one I'd play with.
I do like Sizing Europe as well. He has that great gift of being a Cheltenham spring horse. He's done it, been there and done it twice.
And not the accolades, Will, of the other two, which is amazing, given that you probably would have won the Champion Hurdle. He has won the Arkle and now the Champion Chase, and yet he wouldn't be considered in the same breath as Big Bucks or Hurricane Fly.
Yeah, I guess that's because when he won last year, it wasn't exactly a popular success, was it? He was 10-1. There'd been speculation in the race as to whether he might even go for the Ryanair instead. No one was entirely clear what the choice of target was going to be. He ended up running in the Champion Chase and put some pretty ordinary efforts previously that season behind him with a fantastic victory. So given that most punters will have let that one go unbacked, that probably helps to explain why his profile doesn't quite match the performance of a horse who's rocked up at the last two festivals and proved himself to be a genuine top-class two-mile chaser.
He just seems to come alive in the springtime. Hurricane Fly's problem is just getting to Cheltenham. Twice on the bounce when he was well fancied in previous years, he couldn't quite make the trip. And indeed, it was a case of third time lucky, much to the relief of his trainer, Willie Mullins.
Every time he gets to the track in good order, he just, like the last day here, he was so good. He settled out. We wondered, was he not in good form? But he just settled well. And when Ruby pulled him together, he just zoomed away, zipped away from his field in atrocious conditions. We know he can handle good ground, better ground that you have usually in Cheltenham. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. But I think my biggest part I got out of Cheltenham last year was just getting him there, and once I had the saddle on him in the saddling enclosure, the relief was immense. After that, it was up to himself and Ruby, and thankfully everything went well on the day. Ruby gave him a brilliant ride, but to me it's the same again. It's just the relief of getting him this far so far this year, and now we've just a week to go, and hopefully we'll get him there in good order again. And he seems to have matured a fair bit. If he settles as well in Cheltenham as he did in Leopardstown, I think he could run another big race.
Another big race indeed. They're expecting to win. I thought, Greg, one of the most revealing lines in the last couple of weeks came from Ruby Walsh after he won the big handicap, the Betfair handicap hurdle on Zarkanda from an unpromising position. And when he was asked about Zarkanda as a sort of genuine champion hurdle contender, he says, well, he's got the stamina to win a champion hurdle. And I thought to myself, he's going to need an awful lot more than that, pal, and you know it too.
No, I think that there's no doubt. He's got a very, very obvious chance. And it was interesting, I was at Leopardstown for their race when the Hurricane Fly came back. And you could see, just talking to Willie Mullins after the race, you could see that the immense relief, but he really did believe in the horse again. And it was well documented in the months beforehand that he just hadn't been happy with Hurricane Fly. And maybe it's a little bit like Corto Star last year. There was something. He couldn't possibly even tell you what it was, but there was something that told him the horse wasn't quite right. Now the horse is back to where he thinks he should be. And you could just see in the way he was talking that all the worries are sort of dropping off him. And if he is anything like the form he was in last year, and there's no reason to think that he won't be, you can't see him getting beaten by anything other than just real bad luck. There's always something that can go wrong, but if he gets to run his race, what can you do? What can you do to knock him out of his stride? If anyone's actually going out to try and find a way to beat him, what are they going to do? He travels so well. He'll be able to travel behind any pace. He's got the best jockey in the race. He's got the best form. I just can't see what you would do to try and get him beat.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And Greg's been on those forays across the Irish Sea. And Will, we'd heard talk. It was like in the days before mail and communications. We'd heard talk, hadn't we, about this great French-bred Irish thing who could jump hurdles better than Istabrak and was faster than Group 1 horses on the flat. And all the Irish had been telling us about him and backing him for years and years and years. And lo and behold, 12 months ago, they were absolutely right.
Yeah, he did deliver, and I don't think you can crab the form of last year's race. I thought it was a good quality champion hurdle, and I thought he won it with authority. What's niggling away at the back of my mind about Hurricane Fly, and Greg might be able to help me out with this, is before the race at Leopardstown in January, he just looked very docile in the parade ring beforehand. I mean, he was there and I was only watching the pictures at home, but when he was at Cheltenham last year, he had two handlers in the parade ring, and when he sort of came into the parade ring at Leopardstown looking half asleep, I thought, hello, there's something wrong here. This isn't the Hurricane Fly that I know. And then in the race itself, of course, he produced a brilliant performance. But is there a worry that he might have perhaps lost some of his va-va-voom a little?
Well, I mean, that may have been what the concern was. As I mean, there was no... Willie Mullins was never specific about what it was that was bothering him about Hurricane Fly. He just said he wasn't happy with the horse and he wasn't going to run the horse until he was happy with him.
Hurricane Fly was the horse I felt most likely to kill someone when he was in the winner's enclosure at Punchestown last May. He's son of Munch, isn't he? And some of those horses get a bit of a bad name. He was behaving like a real homicidal loony. So if he wasn't like that at Leopardstown, maybe he is maturing, or maybe he's just not absolutely at the peak and he'll be like that before Cheltenham. Either way, I don't think it's a negative.
No, I think it's a positive. And that they seem to be talking about it like that he's just relaxed, he's more professional. That was the worry. Going to Cheltenham last year, they were worried, seriously worried, that he was just going to boil over and explode. Everything was going to be too much for him. It threatened to do that, and he still won. Ruby Walsh has come out and said, not exactly, but he said, there's a couple of things I did in that race that I won't do again. We got away with it. He got me out of trouble. So I think if he was going to get beat, it was by a good horse, Peddler's Cross, 12 months ago. And even then, they couldn't get him. So,
I mean, I think Zarkandar is unbeaten over hurdles, isn't he? And you always have to allow room in your mind for the possibility that he's like significantly better than what he's shown.
Yeah.
So I do think you have to respect him. I mean, you can't just treat Hurricane Fly as though he's past the post. But you know, it would be highly unusual for Zarkandar to be good enough to get past him, I think.
There is that worry about the age. I know that the trends do get, as you say, sometimes get a bad name, but I do tend to take note particularly of negative trends like that. That there must be some reason why that many generations of horses have failed to
this is Zarkandar as a 5 year old.
A 5 year old. I mean, the catch it, the only one in pretty much in living memory.
One from 87, 5 year old since 1985. Wow. Thank you, Paul Jones.
So that's an entire generation of horses every year that's failing to get home in front in the champion hurdle. It can't be a mere fluke. But Zarkandar, to be fair, did look really classy in the Triumph. Even for a Triumph win, it looked really classy. I thought the way he travelled through the race was really impressive. You could call him the likely winner a long way from home. And it was a great performance at Newbury as well. I think he's going to be an awful lot better. He's won. Paul Nicholls said he's going to improve for Newbury. I think he's going to come on an absolute ton. Whether he'll be good enough to beat Hurricane Fly, I doubt. But I can see him making the frame.
Right, let's ask simple questions then regarding the Cheltenham Bankers, or the most likely to win at the festival. Back or lay, big bucks, Greg?
Oh, it would have to be back.
I'm going to be on Oscar Whiskey.
So it's kind of
a lay, I guess. I don't like the idea of just laying big bucks. Yeah. My goodness, that sounds like a bad betting. So.
I don't think there's any value in his price. I think he's the price he should be, but I mean, I couldn't. If you're going to have a bet, you have to be the one.
I think that's the argument that Tony Calvin made as well. And what about you, Will? Back or lay big bucks?
I think Oscar Whiskey has the best chance any horse has had for a long time of beating big bucks, and I think he's a very fair bet.
Hurricane Fly? Back, and then when my nose starts bleeding, I'll back him again.
Yeah, back.
Yeah, I'd certainly back. I mean, he's still odds against.
I'd probably want to be neutral on him, but I'd be edging towards taking him on.
Ooh, right.
He only won by a length and a quarter last year.
Yeah, Peddler's Cross.
It was a good champion, but this could be a good champion too.
Okay, it's recorded, we've got it. I'd sniff an upset sizing Europe, sort of the three that we've sort of touched on. I don't know where it's going to come from. Well,
exactly, I mean, instinctively you sort of want to take on favourites, don't you, but I can't find something to beat him. He's solid.
That's the point, isn't it, Greg? You can get a horse who you think has vulnerabilities, but then you look down the list and think, who's going to expose those?
Yeah, no, there was, as Will said, it was it was a bit unexpected last year, which in some ways you say it shouldn't have been. It's very easy with hindsight, but ARCA winners do have a great record of going at least very close in the champion chase the following year. He did look like the best two-miler around against Big Zeb last time. What can you put up against him, realistically? If it's a case of do you back him or lay him and just have everything else running for you, I still think I'd just about come down on the side of backing him.
Did you know you can download Timeform race cards for Cheltenham at both the five-day stage and then again at the overnight stage without paying twice? Get ratings for the opening day of the festival on Thursday the 8th of March from noon at www.timeform.com.
Time now for our feature interview with Donald McCain Jr. speaking to Alan Dudman.
And now on this Guardian Racing podcast, in association with Timeform, I'm delighted to be able to welcome trainer Donald McCain. And Don, you've got a number of chances at the Cheltenham Festival, but first, can we focus on Pedlar's Cross? And you revealed on your Betfair column that you're going to aim him now at the Deuce and Novices Chase rather than the Arkle. Was that a difficult decision to make?
It certainly wasn't an easy one, but at the end of the day, we've got to do what we feel is in the best interest of the horse and my owner, you know, and had a good talk with him and Jason and so on, and we just decided for the horse and for his future, where he's at the moment after his Kempton run, that this is the best way forward.
And what did you see in him that wasn't quite pleasing you after his last run then?
It's not really a case of not pleasing. His work's good, his work's always good. It's just we felt I'd have had to, or I felt I'd have been more comfortable if I'd been able to school him more, to sharpen him up, having made that mistake at Kempton, and because of the issues that we had after Kempton, I haven't been able to school them as hard as I want.
And when you spoke to Jason and Tim in that meeting, what were the kind of pros and cons?
Listen, the horse comes first, pure and simple. You know, it didn't take an awful lot of working out in the end, to be honest. It's not a competition, that's irrelevant. He's a belting good horse. I've never been scared of taking a horse on, but we just needed to do what was right by him on the day, and we're hoping to have him for a number of years, not just one day next week, you know, so we'll look after him.
Well, we have a couple of posts on the Guardian from our readers, and there's one here from Orso. As I've mentioned, I fancy Weird Al for the National. Is he likely to run in the Gold Cup, and what does he think of his chances in the National? Now, how's he shaping up, and how's the prep going for Cheltenham?
Oh, we're very pleased with him. Yeah, everything's gone smoothly. We've aimed here for a long time, and, you know, we're happy with him. We decided to give him every chance of running well in the Gold Cup, and we felt the best thing was to do was to go straight there after Haydock, and that's what we're doing, you know, and touch wood, it's gone swimmingly.
And it would be too hard, obviously, to do the two. Has the Gold Cup always been the plan with that campaign in mind for him?
Yeah, it has, but it's not too hard. You know, we'll take Cheltenham first and see, but it's always a possibility. He could be unbelievably well in, if things went well in the Gold Cup, or couldn't he, you know, so it's something that we will think about.
And when I saw him at Cheltenham last year, I mean, he's a smashing looker, isn't he? How's he come on this term?
He's a big good-looking horse, obviously. Yeah. I didn't have him before, I've only had him this time, and he's a quality horse with a high cruising speed. He jumps and stays, goes on decent ground and likes Cheltenham. You know, obviously it's a Gold Cup, nothing's easy, and there's some serious horses in there, but he certainly deserves his chance.
There's a post from Sandy UK, says, now don't laugh, but after some late night reading of the Weatherby Cheltenham Festival betting guide, I've been having some racing related dreams. One of them concerns Simon Sig. Day two is Alpha Off. Day three, it was a Don McCain runner who'll win a handicap race at the festival. So which is the best handicap hope, Don?
I would say the best handicap hope as we stand would be Born, in whichever race he runs in, probably the boys' race, I would think.
He's a smashing horse, good on the flat, and he must have really pleased you at Ascot. When Henry Brook came out of the race, he said he just fought, he was bustled around a bit, but he showed a great attitude.
Yeah, obviously he's never run in that type of contest, so it was a big step up in grade, although he's run a number of those tough handicaps on the flat, which always stands him in good stead. Did it really well, had the right two horses behind him in second and third as well, and beaten them well, so it was a good performance.
And he's got other options, is he, or is that going to be the number one plan for the boys' race, the Mighty Pipe?
He's in the Cole Cup and the County Hurdle as well, I think. But it would be Martin Pipe or Cole Cup, most likely Martin Pipe.
OK, what's the plan, Cinders and Ashes-wise, for the Supreme Novices? Is it all systems go there?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, very pleased with
him. He must have really delighted you this term. He's got another smashing attitude, the way he's gone about his business.
He's a good horse, and he's done really well over the summer. You know, he's twice the specimen he was last year, and he's very exciting.
Is agent Archie going to line up at all?
He runs as well, yeah.
He'll be stepping up in grade, but he must have pleased you the way he's taken his two outings.
Yeah, he had a few setbacks after Ludlow, so he can really take the Newcastle run as his first run again. We lost all the benefit of the first run. He'll come on plenty for the other day. He's a 140 rated novice hurdler, rightly or wrongly, and there's no reason he shouldn't take his chance. That, you know, he was a very useful horse on the flat.
And a horse I absolutely love. He's got a big fan club, Overturn. It takes some doing to win the races on the flat, and also Overjump's tremendously versatile. Is he going to take his chance in the Champion as well?
For sure, yeah. He's bouncing at the moment. He's had a good old break. He's fresh and well, which was always the plan for Cheltenham. And if there's anything like foot ground, he'll run a huge race, I think.
And he ran pretty well, didn't he, last year in the race?
He did, and he's a better horse this year, and we could ride him a little bit more positively again than last year, I think. And, you know, I think he's an improved horse this time, and most of his form when he was fresh and well this season puts him right there in amongst it. Take out Hurricane Fly, you know.
Mm. So that's Overturn. And Cloudy Lane, Fox Hunters, has got a great chance.
Yeah, Cloudy got me started. He's won a number of big races for us. He missed last season. It was an obvious route to go with him, and he's still a high-class chaser. You know, he's enjoyed his two runs round in Hunter Chases. He's not done an awful lot. He always takes a couple of runs to get himself ready, and I expect him to run really well. You know, he's only ever been to Cheltenham once and won, so...
Well, many thanks for your time today, Donald, and best of luck with all your runners at next week's Cheltenham Festival.
No problem. All the best.
For comprehensive Cheltenham coverage, the Bumper Festival issue of Horses to Follow Extra is unmissable. There's a selection given for every race except the cross country, and last year the big race previews included a tip for Long Run when you could still get 11-2. Get the best opinion, advice and analysis from the expert Timeform team, available from Friday the 9th of March. Download yours for just £6 at timeform.com.
Let's extend the betting chat then with Tony Calvin of Betfair with news on another trio then. Some other shorties, people who like to get involved back in a lane have certainly got some work on their plate. Covega going for a fourth, David Nicholson Mayer's race is one.
Yeah, I mean, that's 1.70. It surprised me when I looked at the market. I think it's much shorter elsewhere. I mean, I would have thought she'd have been a lot shorter, really. When you look at what's up against her, you've got Swink and Flame, you've got Unaccompanied, you've got Argyle Sally. They're the next three in the market. And if Willie Mullins has got that in anywhere near the form it has been for the last 3 years, and the updates have been very positive about that, Corvega would be... I'm surprised Corvega isn't comfortably the shortest price trade on Betfair for that, given the paucity of the opposition there. So yeah, I'll be even in a horse that hasn't appeared for so long, Corvega, around about the 8-11 mark is a fair price.
5-6, 12 months ago, 6-4 the year before, 2-1, would you believe, 3 years ago. She's going for a fourth straight win in the race. Sprinter Sacra, all sorts of extraordinary adjectives being plucked from the skies regarding this guy. He's going to divide opinion. He's going to fill pockets or he's going to empty them.
I think this is the Betfair horse of the festival in many respects. You've got everyone who was at Newbury last time was just blown away by it. I mean, you were having trainers there saying, you know, this would win the Champion Chase. I spoke to Paul Nicholls afterwards. He just said, unbelievably electric. You know, highly impressive, and you can't fail to be more impressed by that. But when you get the Betfair punters looking at it in a bit more cold-hearted there, I think they'll look at it and think, you know, Alpha off. I think Timeform rate that the highest rated novice chaser this season. You've got the likes of Peddler's Cross, you've got Q Card. I mean, Q Card's form against Phenomenstop's been franked. You've got the people who believe in Menorah can go well if it stands up. I think there's plenty you can put against that horse, and, you know, I think, you know, there is the argument of, I don't really buy that, you know, Sprinter Sacra could beat itself with its exuberant style, etc. I can see plenty against that. I mean, Sprinter Sacra may be the second coming, but whenever you get a trainer like Nicky Henderson and a jockey like Barry Geraghty actually really hyping this horse, you know, one that could be the best I've trained, etc., you can lop a point off straight away, couldn't you? But it was undoubtedly very, very impressive. But like I said, in many ways, I think Sprinter Sacra could be the, you know, the juggernaut and the, you know, immovable object colliding at in the back of the legs, colliding in that. It's a fascinating race, the Arkle. Hopefully, Pedlar's Cross, you know, will go for that. But Donald McCain will be the first person to tell, to, you know, his Betfair reading and his column what he's going to go for that. He's committed to actually breaking the news on Betfair first there as well. So hopefully he'll take the brave route, and that Arkle could be some race.
Mm. Yeah, absolute cracker, Jack. Yeah, don't forget to read up on all of that on betfair.com. You'll be able to get the lowdown on Gordon Elliott's runners, on Donald McCain Jr.'s, and also Paul Nicholls.
Get the ultimate form guide for Cheltenham with Timeform Race Passes. A 7-day subscription could give you open access to Timeform data for just £1 per meeting. Sign up from Friday the 7th of March to get ratings, form and much more for all 4 days of the Cheltenham Festival. For the best ratings and analysis, visit timeform.com.
Such a good crop of novice chasers coming through. Let's turn our attention to one or two of those divisions. Sprinter Sacra in the Arkle chase, of course, and no Pedlar's Cross now to bang heads with as well, which is the latest development in a week of extraordinary stories, Greg.
Yes, I mean, that if you're going to look for one to take on, that would be the one I'd take on. I think that will be a race a lot will turn on that for a lot of punters.
You're going to take on Sprinter Sacra?
Yeah, I would take on Sprinter Sacra.
What is it about him that has you wondering?
Just the fact that if it hadn't been for what he did last year, you would have backed him in running quite cheerfully a couple of flights out, and he just didn't quite deliver what he promised. That would put me off. I know it's a different race, different discipline, but until you've actually seen them do it...
Mm. He was still growing into himself, and that had a lot to do with the fact he was probably being taken out of his comfort zone with the pace they were going over those hurdles as well.
Yeah, very much
different
so.
Deal now.
We'll come back to that. Let's hear what Nicky Henderson has to say.
He's a show-off, really, isn't he? I mean, he's the most gorgeous horse. You'd be pushed to see a better-looking horse, in fairness. But he knows he's that. I think he walks around as if he knows he's rather handsome, and bad luck is a gelding, really, isn't it? But then when he gets on the race course, he does the same thing. It's all, look at me, and it's watch this, boys, and off we go. And he just likes to do what he's doing. He finds it frighteningly easy. And I think that's just the worry about him, that, you know, you mustn't get complacent. Barry won't be. He thinks it's just exciting. I find it terrifying. But then, you know, it's like any of these things. We have to sit and watch rather than actually enjoy what you're doing.
Frightening. He's been described as the best horse I've ever sat on by Barry Gerritsen, considering he had a champion chase winner of the decade, probably Moscow Flyer, as a regular pilot round Cheltenham over 2 miles. Those are strong, strong words. Will Haler, you and I have sort of had this conversation on numerous occasions, haven't we, about what he might be, Sprinter Sacra, but that's the discussion, really. It's a novice event. He's still got to go and prove himself.
It's funny, isn't it, Alex? I think we had a conversation on Timeform Radio, must have been about sort of December, wasn't it? About it, pretty much exactly where we are now, wondering, pontificating what kind of horse Sprinter Sacra might be. And here we are, just a week away from finding out. I'm torn with Sprinter Sacra, and I'll tell you why. Because on the plus side, I was almost left agog by what he did at Newbury. You know, I just thought he was immaculate. It was almost the perfect performance. He jumped brilliantly. He won on the bridle. He quickened when he had to. He met them short. He met them long. He was just perfect. But on the minus side, showy horses, flashy horses, they're not the sort of horses one wants to take to Cheltenham. Cheltenham is not a showground. You know, it's a boxing ring, isn't it? It's where you have to get tough. It's where races are not won by the sort of the best looking or the best jumper. They're often won by the toughest, grittiest horse, the horse with the overround qualities, yeah. With that mixture of speed and stamina and jumping. Perhaps not exceptional in any category, but good in all of them.
Can I throw in one other word?
Go on.
the quickest horses usually win at Cheltenham as well. And he looks the quickest.
But not always, Alex, because this is Sprinter Sacra. Oh, I'm not saying I'm with him and I'm not saying I'm against him, but he is exactly the sort of horse who could plough through the first, make a terrible mistake, get out of rhythm with his jumping, and never get back into the race. That's what puts me off from saying he's a banker, because he's exactly that kind of showy horse who, when he's under maximum pressure, I'm not convinced he's going to deliver.
I don't know. I don't think we're talking about a kind of Carvel's Hill type horse. I mean, he's a nice big animal. And actually, if you're at Cheltenham on the first day, the one race you've got to go and look at the paddock for is the Arkle, because this is what a steeplechaser should look like. I thought before the Newbury race, he's perhaps the best, most impressive looking chaser I've ever seen. Oh. And I think he's enough of an athlete, and he responds quite quickly as well to what's happening in front of him. Even if he does make the odd mistake, or if he gets a bit crowded or whatever, he'll be able to get out of it. And I understand that people have these concerns about him, but I don't share them.
It's interesting what Will was saying about the toughest horse. I mean, the horse that slightly out-toughed him last year just happens to be lining up against him.
Alpha Off.
Yeah, and if you look at the percentages the prices represent, the market's suggesting that Sprinter Sacra is several times more likely to win. It's I would rather be, much rather be with Alpha Off.
So, all right, back or lay?
I would lay Sprinter Sacra, but I'd back Alpha Off as well.
So take him on, Chris.
Back. Yeah,
I'm going to sit on the fence. I just watch him. And enjoy one way or the other.
You never said that was an option.
It is for me. I'm the horse. What about you, Will?
Well, depending upon the price on the day, I may lay him for a place. It's difficult.
Oh, my God.
I'd like him, I'd like him to be as good as it looks he might be. But I do just suspect that if things don't go to plan, he won't be in the first three. That's my hunch is win or blowout.
That's a really good point. Depending on the price. But if the favourite goes in the first race, then you might find a lot of money running onto him in the second. There might be a huge gamble might develop, and he might end up at an unrealistic price.
Yeah, that's a fair point. He's getting everyone excited. Grand Cru to an extent as well. Colto Stars searching Gallop Saturday is going to have an impact on whether Grand Cru, we think, goes for the Gold Cup or the RSA. Reading between the lines, Greg, how do you see that unfolding?
I've thought for a while that he might well end up in the Gold Cup. I thought that because I suspect that the owner would rather go for the Gold Cup, and I can see good reasons why the owner would want to go for the Gold Cup. I think the dynamics of the decision are different for the trainer and for the owner, and people often say the connections want to go for this race, but there's often very different incentives for the trainer and the owner. The trainer is looking at a horse's whole career. He's also has 100 new horses coming through the yard quite possibly every year. For an owner, this is quite probably the one chance they will get with a horse of this quality, and that's the one you can go to your grave saying, I had a Gold Cup winner. Who knows what form the horse will be in next year? Wouldn't be the youngest first time that horse having its first run in the Gold Cup anyway. We just don't know what form we'll be in next year, so I can see why the owner would want to go for the Gold Cup, and I can see why the trainer would want to go for the RSA, and somewhere in between there's going to have to be a reconciliation of those two views. And because the owner's the one who pays the bills ultimately, it may well be that it will just swing in that direction. If one of the big two came out, it would change things dramatically.
I do think you can make a case for Bobsworth turning around the Kempton form, though, having had his wind up since then, and you obviously has to improve a lot on the last run. But Nicky Henderson said he only had his first gallop from the Kempton race about 5 days before he turned up at Ascot and got beat by Invictus. So I think Bobsworth is in the RSA, even if Grand Cru turns up there.
There's this idea that the RSA is the easy option. It isn't necessarily that much easier an option. The level of the competition may appear to be much easier to beat, but it doesn't work out. These are horses that are going to be the Gold Cup horses of tomorrow. I don't think they've got a huge amount to lose going for the Gold Cup now?
Well, if it were me, I'd never run him in the Gold Cup, just because, you know, I'm so mindful of the rotten record that novices have in that race. And I do think the Gold Cup regularly is the most taxing steeplechase we run in this country.
Yeah.
You know, even more so than the Grand National, you could argue, because they always go such a strong pace and the level of talent is so high. Beef for Salmon ran in it as a novice and fell about third or fourth fence. Mm. And I think that may have led to a sort of back injury that sort of continued to niggle at him for the rest of his career. And we all know what happened to Glory Victor. So I think if they do go for the Gold Cup, there should be some sort of acknowledgement of the increased risk that the horse would face in that race.
Any other sort of novices that are on your radar in the chasing division, first of all, before we maybe turn to one or two of the hurdles races? You've got the new Jusen. Probably don't want to go into the handicap, the novices' handicap chase at this stage. But obviously, the news is now that Pedlar's Cross is going to go for the new 2.5 mile race. What sort of shape is he in? Is he in the right race? Is he just simply too good enough? There's so many questions again, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, it changes the whole shape of the race, really. It's interesting that they are taking the step up. He had plenty of pace last year. I mean, he was just not what beating the 3-odd lengths of in the champion hurdle. So it's an interesting decision. I don't know if they're running scared of sprinter Sacra. There may be an element of that in there. I'm a little surprised. I thought they would go the Arkle route. It's a race that's made for the best hurdler. You want to look at the chasing form, but the highest rated hurdler often comes out and wins the Arkle the following year. And so that would have given Pedlar's Cross a really strong chance in that race. He's got to have a big chance in the Jusen. He's going to be one that people will want to be with. But it is a shame. I think it would have made for a better Arkle if he'd been in there.
So many novice events, so many talented horses. You've got the Supreme Novices to kick things off as well. The first off the 20-odd races of the festival. The Neptune, which is the 2.5 mile race, is always one of my favourites. It's a race that's been won by the likes of Hardy Eustace and Isterback before they step back down in distance to win the champion hurdle. This Boston Bob has looked pretty good for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh over the other side of the Irish Sea. He has the Albert Bartlett, which is the 3 mile, as a potential engagement as well. Any other horses you boys would have your radar on? We'll bring in Will first of all.
I'm a big fan of a horse of Willie Mullins called Sula Sieur. He was beaten over Christmas at Leopardstown in a Grade 1. The trainer felt that the horse was very much not seen to best effect there. They got the tactics wrong. He ran again at Leopardstown last time out in the Deloitte, and he made a bad mistake at the second last, which cost him an awful lot of ground. It wasn't that bad a mistake, really. It just was a sloppy mistake, and by the time the horse had got his stride back, the winner had flown, and he had 12 lengths to make up from that point. He didn't quite manage it, but he finished really strongly. He's got options in the Supreme and the Neptune, but I think he's a horse with a real engine. And even if he turns up in the same race as another Mullins horse, you know, even if he turns up against Boston Bob in the Neptune, he's definitely one I want to have on my side. You watch the replay of the Deloitte again, see how much ground he makes up after that mistake at the second last, and tell me that he won't beat that horse Beneficent again on equal terms.
Yeah, fair shout. Greg Woods, other horses on your radar?
Well, another one from that race, Make Your Mark.
That horse travelled beautifully through that.
Absolutely beautifully. Got swamped, really, and Boston Bob produced a really good performance to come past him as easily as he did, because Make Your Mark, you'd have had a lot of money on him sort of a couple of flights out. He travelled like the best horse in the race. Where he's going to end up, I mean, it looks like the Supreme, I think, and he's a big prize.
I think the Supreme's the race for him. Yeah. I'm thinking they're going to go for the Neptune, but I think the Supreme's the race for him.
Yeah, he's about 16-20 for the Supreme at the moment. Well, I just have to see where he does turn up. I mean, he's 16-1 for the Neptune, so there's not a lot in it on that. But on just the way he ran in that race, you'd think the Supreme would suit him perfectly.
Yeah, that's my... If I have a golden rule, and I actually... Most of my bets at Cheltenham are in the novice events, because I think that it's pretty much my judgment against yours. There's no hard and fast rules in terms of who's got the best form. Not really. You're going to have graded 2 form versus grade 1 form, but it's not cut and dried about which is a better piece of form. So it comes down to watching the videotapes, and horses like that who just travel and jump well,
just knock your eye out and make your mark is definitely on my list.
It's as open a renewal of that race as I can remember.
What about you, Chris?
Are we only talking about novice hurdles at this point? I like Betonia, who sort of symbolises the Alan King renaissance. He was really highly thought of a couple of years ago when he was just starting off in bumpers. Won his first bumper and then just didn't go on, and the trainers at a loss to explain why, but he's kind of fallen apart until his last two runs at Cheltenham, one on New Year's Day and then again at the end of January. Show much improved form, and he beat Broadback Bob there at the end of January, looking like a proper Neptune candidate to my eye. And I don't know how much value there's left in the price. I think he's about 8-1, and he does also have an entry in the Coral Cup. So I mean, like all these horses, you want to see where they turn up first. Mm. But I think he's a really interesting horse, and he's got a lot more to come than has been shown so far.
Yeah, they like him. I was down at Alan King's the other day, and I think he's going to go for the Neptune rather than the Coral Cup. They really like him. They say, I know it might look like it took a while for him to get his head in front and he was beaten in a handicap previously at Ascot, but he's better than that. They really like him. So, yeah, there might be a bit of encouragement there.
The Ultimate Form Guide just got better, just in time for the festival. Time Form race passes already provide open access to Time Form ratings, form, in-play data and live Betfair prices. And now we've added a 7-day list of horses in focus, comprehensive form archive and summary of the last three runs on the meeting and coverage of big races abroad. Race passes start at just £10 for 24 hours. Get them now at www.timeform.com.
Right, let's come up with one or two for listeners to go to war with over the 4 days of the Cheltenham Festival. One or two tips, Will, starting with you.
Well, I'll give you three to have a crack at. I suppose one of my strongest fancies for the week is T for Three in the 4-miler. His novice chase form this season is working out really well. You have a look at the form with the likes of Joined Together and Cannington Brook, and you know, particularly what Cannington Brook has done since, and the form just looks really, really good. But most importantly of all, he looks like he's a horse who's crying out for 4 miles. So he'd be right at the top of my list. I fancy a horse called Argo Cat for the Fred Winter. He's done better since he went over hurdles. He's gone to Tom Taff, who's had a revival this season after a couple of terribly lean seasons. Better ground, you'll see a better horse, and I think he's got a really solid chance in the Fred Winter. And at a really big price, I'll put up Viva Colonia as a possible outsider in the county hurdle. He's one of the numerous horses that wasn't suited by the way the race panned out in the Ladbroke hurdle at Ascot. A silly race, really. They went a slow pace and nothing coming from behind was able to get into the race. He's been off the course since, but I understand the county hurdle is the aim, and he's not unfeasibly handicapped on the best of his form. He's got Cheltenham form in the book too. So at a chunky price, he's another to chuck into the mix.
That's the sort of giver Will Haler is. Ask for one or two and you've got a hoard there to go to town with. What about you, Chris Cook?
Horse I really like. I mean, he's pretty high profile, but he always seems to be underestimated. Get me out of here. He's probably going to go for the Coral Cup, I sense, although he's in the county hurdle as well. Whichever one he turns up in, you have to respect a horse like that who always runs well in those high-class handicap hurdles, and I'm sure he'll do well again. Son of Vic is a horse Paul Nichols put up last week at a Wincanton Festival preview as his bet of the week. He's sort of a failed chaser, really, and he's going to be in the pretemps, and Nichols obviously feels strongly that he's ahead of his handicap mark. You know, he's not the sort of profile of a horse that, you know, you'd normally be interested in backing, but you can get 11-1, and given how bullish Nichols is about him, and you know how that isn't the sort of horse that he would have to be talking up, I thought that was really interesting. And then there's Vendor, who, I mean, the secret is out. He's at the top of the market for the Fred Winter. I think he's 7-2 top price, which isn't brilliant, but I don't think it's been highly publicised enough how far ahead of his handicap mark he might be. Alan King thinks he's as good as his Triumph Hurdle horses. Even according to Timeform, he's something like 1.5 stones ahead of his actual handicap rating. He's only run once in this country, so it's really difficult for the handicappers to get a handle on him. They've more or less had to rely on the French mark, and it seems the French mark underestimates him quite dramatically.
Yeah, lots of chat about him. Remember the names so far. Pen and paper ready, Greg Wood?
Well, I'm going to just canter through three at pretty decent prices. Yet another one in the Fred Winter, actually. The Fred Winter's a great race. It's one of my favourite races now. Everyone seems to find one in the Fred Winter. It's been going just, you know, only a few years, but It has thrown out some fascinating results. I remember Chris having the winner at 40-1, was it?
Oh, yeah. God, that was a nice memory. Shamayun.
Shamayun, that's the one. And the one I found today, it's just plucked out from lower down. It's a really big price. James Hewitt, Unguet Appens. It's awful name.
I saw that win up at Ayr.
Won at Ayr on its British debut. Now, it's got the interesting sort of profile for this race. Had a couple of quiet runs in France. It's just come over here. It's won its first race over here. It was the way it did it. It jumped really well at Ayr, and then ran on really willingly when asked the question. And it's just a stab in the dark, really. But there's been some funny winners of this race. They tend not to be horses with lots of ones in front of their name. And I just thought around about 25-33-1 might be an each way stab. In the Coral Cup, Tona Dudary, again, similar sort of, it's the right sort of profile for the race. Been quiet, it's been put away for a while, hasn't run for quite a while. A lot of Coral Cup winners recently have been horses that are coming back from a bit of a layoff. I remember 90th Minute, 2 or 3 years ago, a similar sort of a profile, quite few quiet runs in Ireland, then put away. They were sure they were going to get in the race, no point messing up his handicap mark anymore. Gordon Elliott, cracking trainer. Really one of the coming people in Irish racing.
Yeah.
Like that one. The other final one, New Year's Day in the bumper. John Ferguson, amazing first season. Training some really, obviously some high-class bloodstock he's had. These sort of Godolphin cast-offs or horses that just haven't made it for one reason or another, haven't been able to live up to their breeding. But New Year's Day, by Motivator, out of a German-bred mare, has just done nothing wrong in two races so far. Look class. Look all flat class, really. Mm-hmm. And for the bumper, I just thought it might be worth a little go at around about, I think it's about 12-14-1.
Well, looking out for all of those, for what it's worth, Minor, Hurricane Fly in the Champion Hurdle, I just think he has to turn up and do what he did last year. He'll win, and at anything close to even money is a terrific price. Albert Bartlett, I've backed Sea of Thunder already. He's unexposed over 3 miles. He would have won at Cheltenham early in the season, but for just clipping the top bar of the last when he was going to romp clear by 10 lengths. He finished fifth in the Boston Bob Grade 2 at Leopardstown. I think that's strong form. I think he's a good horse. And a little cheeky one. Sometimes out on dispatches, guys, you sort of pick up on little things. I was down at Alan King's the other day with you, Chris, and one horse who knocked my eye out in the paddock. It was the only horse out of Alan King's 20, I think, that are going to Cheltenham, who was starting to come in his summer coat, Kumbashwar. Speaking to the owner at Newbury just a couple of days ago, I hope I'm not breaking trust here, but they're going to pop the blinkers on at Cheltenham. Apparently that was a sort of go-to measure when David Evans had him on the flat, and according to his former trainer, it sparked the living daylights out of him. So he, I think, physically is ready to run the race of his life. I think in terms of approach, they're getting him close to running the race of his life. Everything is ticking the right boxes. He's in the Grand Daniel. You're going to have to wait till the 27th race of the whole festival, folks, to get on. But he's in off 10 stone 8. And I he's not a plot, but I think everything's just in place for him to run well. And you'll get a price as well.
I think we ought to mention Tullamore Dew as well in the Burn Plate, seeing as one of our much-loved Talking Horses correspondents, Goofs, has been prattling on about him for days on end now, telling us that this horse is going to come good at the. He does usually run a blinder at the Cheltenham Festival. He's third in the same race last year and second in the Coral Cup previous season. So we'd better include Tullamore Dew as a mention, as we doff our hats to our loyal readers.
And we celebrate with a dose of the product.
Yeah, well, you know.
I was just going to say, Alex, you mentioned the Grand Annual. One thing to look out for in the Grand Annual, Lucy Alexander is riding the Bois-Tron in that race, or she expects to anyway. I was interviewing at Kelso on Saturday. She's a really promising young rider, and it's so rare for a woman to be a professional jump jockey. You know, wish her all the best, and hopefully, you know, she can have success that will encourage other girls to follow her into the game.
Well, my thanks to Chris Cook, Deputy Racing Editor, Greg Wood, Racing Correspondent, and Will Haler, Chief Tipster of The Guardian, for their input, their talk and tips on this Guardian Cheltenham Festival podcast in association with Betfair and Timeform. There's been talk, there's been tips, there's been passion and punting, and there's going to be entertainment, exhilaration, and a whole lot more. Well, let's hope that you enjoy the Cheltenham Festival 2012.